Good morning. My name is Tim Porter, and I'm one of the pastors for Faith Community Church, and just thank you so much for being here in the room. It's so cold out. My hands are still cold, and I've been in the building for a while here. Online, thank you so much for joining with us this morning as well. And if this is one of your first times here, thank you for coming out on a nice, cold, chilly day. And we're praying that you are able to feel welcome and warmer than my hands do right now. So we are in a series called Chasing the Wind, and we are learning from an author that we're calling the professor. He wrote a book called Ecclesiastes, and he is a wise teacher, and he is forcing us to look at life and its meaninglessness. And so I think it's a good book for us to be studying after a Packer loss last night, right? That was pretty meaningless. So he's doing that. And what he's trying to do is he's trying to, like, force us to take a real evaluation about the world that we live in and how do we live in the world that we have that seems to make sense, especially a world where things are broken and a world where there is death, and where death seems to make everything meaningless. What can last? And he's been teaching us along the way to what's good for a human being to do in a world that's broken and messy, in a world that has death in it. What's good for us to do? And he has given us some advice about the importance of having good friends and family that we can enjoy meals with. Work is very important for meaning and purpose in life, as long as you don't build your identity on it. And today he's going to talk to us and affirm something that other books of the Bible talk about as well, and that is that it's important, very important for a human being to focus on having a good name. Now, we like the name Tim here, but when we're talking about a good name, we're not talking about having a good first name or a good family name. We're talking about a reputation. Years ago now, I had the opportunity to meet one of my heroes. I was at a conference where he was at, and I had a pre-release copy of a new book that just came out that he had authored. And I brought my book into this one room where some friends of his and some colleagues were meeting, and I had an opportunity to be in that room. And I went up to him, and I said, "Dr. Beale, would you please sign this book?" And he was so kind, he said, "Don't call me Dr. Beale, you can call me Greg." I'm like, "Okay, Dr. Beale." And he said, he wanted to know a little bit about me. He's like, "Well, what's your name?" And I said, "Well, my name's Tim Porter." And he goes, "Wait, how do I know your name?" I know. Someone said, "Oh, no." Like, that's what I thought. He said, "Oh, how do I know your name?" And I'm just like, "Oh, crap, what did I do?" It's like, what in the world? How did he know my name? And so I told him, like, "Well, we do have some mutual friends, and maybe they've talked about me a little bit. Hopefully they said something good." And he's like, "Oh, yeah, Tom told me about you. Yeah, he thinks really highly of you, da-da-da." And I felt really good, and, "Okay, Dr. Beale, just sign my book and let me get out of here," right? Now, we all have a name. We all have a name that other people respond to emotionally when our name is mentioned. When they see our name pop up on their messages, when they see our name on social media, when they hear about us from other people, we all have a name. And the Bible emphasizes that one of the most important things that we can do as human beings is to get and achieve a good name. Proverbs 22:8 mentions this, says this: "A good name is to be chosen rather than great riches, and favor is better than silver or gold." Now, we're going to find in this section with the professor is that he's going to say, yes, get a good name. We'll talk a little bit more about that. But in getting a good name, he's going to save us. He's going to attempt to save us from two dangers, heart motivations that we can have as human beings, because we're in a broken world when we seek to build a good name and have a good character. He's going to save us from that. He's going to save us from the pressure of trying to determine outcomes based on our behavior. I'll say more about that. And he wants to save us from judgmentalism. That's so easy to do when you start to grow in character. And he wants to point us to a heart motivation that can really save us from either of those two dangers. Okay? So we're looking at and learning from Ecclesiastes chapter 7. And we're going to read through chapter 7, verses 1 through 22. Chapter 7, 1 through 22. He tells us, a good name is better than precious ointment, and the day of death than the day of birth. It is better to go to the house of mourning than to go to the house of feasting, for this is the end of all mankind, and the living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for by sadness of face the heart is made glad. The heart of the wise is in the house of mourning, but the heart of fools is in the house of myrrh. It's better for a man to hear the rebuke of the wise than to hear the song of fools. For as the crackling of thorns under a pot, so is the laughter of fools. This also is vanity. Surely oppression drives the wise into madness, and a bribe corrupts the heart. Better is the end of a thing than its beginning. And the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? Just think about that when we think about 2019, okay? For it's not from wisdom that you would ask this. Wisdom is good with an inheritance, an advantage to those who see the sun. For the protection of wisdom is like the protection of money, and the advantage of knowledge is that wisdom preserves the life of him who has it. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked? In the day of prosperity, be joyful. In the day of adversity, consider. God has made the one as well as the other, so that man may not find out anything that will be after him. In my vain life, I have seen everything. There is a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there is a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. Be not overly righteous, and do not make yourself too wise. Why should you destroy yourself? Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? It is good that you should take hold of this, and from that withhold not your hand, for the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. Wisdom gives strength to the wise, more than 10 rulers who are in a city. Surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you. Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Now, in this series, Pastor Tim Prince has been talking and mentioning this group, this anonymous group of people at Faith Community Church who love the book of Ecclesiastes. And I just want to give a little name to one of the people that loves the book of Ecclesiastes, and I'm one of them. I don't know what that says about me psychologically or philosophically or temperamentally, but I love the book of Ecclesiastes, and I love the book of Ecclesiastes for the very reason that Tim has been talking about, that the book of Ecclesiastes seems to give voice to questions and insights and observations that we're all making, but few of us have the courage to speak out loud. And one of the things that the author of Ecclesiastes does is he forces us to really, really wrestle with the reality of death in our world and in our lives so that we can use it as a filter. If we live in a world where there's death, what really matters? Now, in seeking to focus on the death, he's not trying to keep us or make us gloomy or sorrowful. He wants the end result to be gladness. So he writes, it's better to go into the house of mourning than to go into the house of feasting. For this is the end of all mankind. The living will lay it to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter. For by sadness of face, the heart is made glad. Now, oftentimes, if you've been to a funeral that I lead here at Faith Community, I'll mention this passage. Because so often we try to go into a funeral and leave and not really consider what's going on, and that we will one day be in the casket that other people are mourning. And there is something in a funeral can teach us that a party can't. And if we don't pay attention, we'll miss. We'll miss what's going on. Now, what the author of Ecclesiastes is going to teach us, what the prophet is going to tell us, is that even in a world where there is death, one of the most important things that you and I can acquire in life, something that will last beyond us, that death can't take away, is a good name, a good reputation, because we have become good people. So verse 1, a good name is better than precious ointment than the day of death, than the day of birth. This is important for all of us, and especially in our culture, where we tend to want to compensate for our character by what we own. I'm a good person. I'm a successful person. Just look at what I own. Now, we might be cash poor because we're in debt up to our ears, but look at what I own. This shows that I am a successful person. Now, wealth is a good thing, but it can be taken away like that. A good name endures. It's one of the most important things we can give ourselves to, is to becoming good people as God defines us as good people, so that our reputation is good. Our name is good. Just a brief experiment. Companies know this about branding. I'm going to say a few brands. You don't have to tell me what your emotional reaction is, but everybody has a bit of an emotional reaction to it. Apple. Microsoft, but nobody likes that. Apple, right? Harley Davidson. Some people love Harley Davidson. Other people like to ride motorcycles and have them, you know, use them and not keep them in the shop all the time. But anyway, Harley Davidson. Packers. Nike. Now, there are emotional reactions that come to mind when we think of certain brands out there, and there are emotional reactions that other people have when they think of us, assessments of us. Now, that can make us very self-conscious. In one sense, it's just pointing out the reality. Our reputations go before us, and our reputations come after us. This is why the author of Ecclesiastes says the day of death is actually better than the day of birth. Did you catch that? The day of death is better than the day of birth. Why? Well, because of the day of birth, there's so much potential, but we don't really know what a little baby's going to become in life. The only way you know the name and the character of somebody is at their funeral. What kind of person did they become? Birthdays are awesome. Birth announcements are wonderful, but it's all potential. Funeral announcements let you know what this person has become like. So the point is to become a kind of person that has a good reputation, gracious, full of integrity, trustworthy. We want to chase after piety to grab hold of it and take it on, that we would be godly people. When people think of our names, they think godly person. He says, better is the end of a thing than its beginning. Okay, that's good. What does he mean by that? He's bringing it up in the sense of, again, you can have all kinds of potential at the beginning of your life, but the end of your life shows your measure. What kind of person are you? He's going to give us a little bit of a hint here in these next verses about something that he wants us to avoid that can lodge into our hearts. He says, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. you mean by that? There's a type of spirit that you and I can have. It's an impatient spirit. It's an angry spirit. It's a proud spirit. Why? Because we've started to change and we've started to become people who are respectable. And so easily, he says, you can become prideful, judgmental, critical in spirit, because you see all the flaws in somebody else and other people don't measure up to you or your standard. It's a danger in seeking and chasing piety and a good name. So he wants to correct two dangers so that we can experience fullness of life, so that we can experience joy as we seek to have a good name and make a name for ourselves in a way that honors God. The first is he wants to save us from the pressure of trying to make life work by being a good person. He says, in my vain life, verse 15, in my vain life, I've seen everything. He mentions that he's seen a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, and there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in his evil doing. If you pay attention, he says, if you really pay attention to life, righteous people, good people, die young and die in abysmal circumstances. Wicked, foolish people can live a very long life and have a very fruitful long life. What's he getting at? He wants to save us from trying to manage our lives by our behavior. There's a righteous man who perishes in his righteousness, he says. Remember Billy Joel's song, Only the Good Die Young? Billy Joel didn't come up with that line. It's actually a 4th-century philosopher who looked at life and said, if you actually seek to be wise, you probably will die young. Well, what's the point? What's the point of being righteous if I'm going to die young? Author of Ecclesiastes in chapter 2 has the same observation. The wise person has eyes in his head. The fool walks in darkness. So you don't want to be foolish. He says, but yet I perceived that the same events happened to all of them, regardless of being foolish or wise. You can't control your life based on your behavior. Then he said, I said in my heart, what happens to the fool is also going to happen to me, and he's wise. Why then have I been so very wise? This is vanity. It doesn't make any sense. What's the point of having a good name? What's the point of being wise? So what he's getting at here is that there's a type of motivation for being wise that says something like this. If you're a good person, you become a good person, you build your name so that other people think that you're a very good person, a person of integrity, a person who tells the truth, a person that is kind, life will go well for you. And the author of Ecclesiastes says, no, it won't. There's no guarantee of that. I've seen a righteous person die in their righteousness. There's no guarantee if you're a good person, you're going to live long. There was a book a long time ago, 80s, 70s, written Rabbi Kushner, based on Ecclesiastes, trying to answer the question, why do bad things happen to good people? Anybody else ever wrestled with that? Why do bad things happen to good people? Notice the assumption in that question, that if I'm a good person, bad things shouldn't happen to me. And the author of Ecclesiastes is saying, look, we live in a broken world that's filled with sin. You can't control the outcome of your life based in your behavior. You can't do it. It puts a pressure on you. Last week, Tim sang for us, John Lennon, Imagine. I'm not going to sing for you today. I'm just going to quote it because I would butcher the song, but remember this if you've seen The Sound of Music. This is Maria and the captain singing to one another out of their love for one another, amazed about their love for one another. They sing, nothing comes from nothing. Nothing ever could. So somewhere in my youth or childhood, I must have done something good, for here you are standing there loving me. Whether or not you should, So somewhere in my youth or childhood, hear this, I must have done something good. I'm experiencing something really good right now, and so I must have done something good in my past to deserve the good that I'm experiencing right now. This kind of Western view of karma, that if I do enough good things in life, the universe owes me, as if the universe cares. Now, we can take this into Christianity, too, and say, God, you owe me. You owe me. We entered into a relationship, God. But it becomes a contractual relationship. God, I will do good. You tell me to do good. You tell me to be obedient. I will obey you. I'll do as good as I possibly can. And God, this is your end of the bargain. You don't let anything bad happen to me. And my life turns out really well because I'm obedient to you. I'm doing what you tell me to do. The author of Ecclesiastes says, why are you doing that to yourself? It's crazy talk. You're going to destroy yourself. There's been times in my self-talk, if I'm going into something that makes me nervous is approaching, if it's like a presentation I got to give and this could really change the direction of my life, or if I'm going on an airplane, I don't like to fly, I'm going on an airplane, and I'm looking at my life going, okay, I better not sin this week because I'm going to go on an airplane, and I bet you if I sin this week, the plane's going to go down. As if I can control the weather and the goodness of the pilot by my behavior. It sounds silly, but please pay attention to your hearts. You talk the same way to your heart. We have the same kind of expectations. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do we even assume that they should or they shouldn't? Because we still think in our hearts at times that I can control the outcome of my life based in my behavior and if I'm a good person. Now, if we think that way, we're going to drive ourselves into despair. This is what he's trying to teach us to avoid. He says in verses 15 and 16, there is a wicked man who prolongs his life by in evil doing. You can be really successful and have a really long, wonderful life by being really, really wicked and having a really bad name. He's seen it. He says, so don't be overly righteous. And don't make yourself too wise. Why should you destroy yourself? If you're living your life thinking that I can control the outcome of my life based in my behavior, how good I am, when are you good enough to deserve a great life? That's what he's trying to save us from. This can happen also in the, you know, just in sort of the micro relationships that we are in. Pat Stream is our pastor for counseling here at Faith Community, and we've talked a lot about this, and I've been in counseling situations with him and in conversations with him about my own heart where there's this expectation that we have or a spouse will have that if I change, even though I've been living this way, I've been critical of spirit in relationship to my wife for 20 years, if I start to become gracious to her, I'm expecting that her heart will start to open up to me in the next 24 hours. It happens all the time. And people give up on God and they give up on life change because they think, if I change in this way and I become a good person in this way, I just make this modification of my behavior, then other people will respond to me better than what they are. And it doesn't work that way. We're not supposed to grow a good name so that we can get other people to treat us the way that we want them to. We're supposed to grow a good name to represent God and who he is. So that's one of the dangers. The next danger that he wants us to avoid is growing in character and becoming more godly without judgmentalism and looking down on others. And a critical spirit. And a critical spirit. Going back to verses 8 and 9, he says, the patient in spirit is better than the proud in spirit. Be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. So easily, we can start to look down on others. The church is critiqued well by our culture at times, by being judgmental in our spirits toward the rest of the world because we think we're better than others, because we know God. And we know some truth about God. And we need to be on guard against becoming judgmental and self-righteous as we are changing, because we can start to look down on others and expect them to be different, to become angry when people don't change at the rate that we think they should change at. When we become judgmental or proud in spirit, we become critical in spirit, and we start to be able to notice what's wrong with everybody else's name. Become very critical of others. But what the author of Ecclesiastes wants to experience is not being critical of others, but being generous in spirit. Generous in spirit. When we see somebody else's sin, we don't become overly critical. Try to point it out, to beat them over the head with it, be angry with them about it. But to say, yeah, I know what that's like too. When someone shows us their sin, either by behavior or by telling it to us, we remember just how patient God has been with us, how gracious he's been with us. It allows us to come alongside others and not look down on others. The professor reminds us, verses 20 to 22, surely there is not a righteous man on earth who does good and never sins. We could say that intellectually, maybe conceptually, but you take that on personally, that you as a human being, even as you're making a good name for yourself by building your character to look more like God, you still have really deep flaws in your name and in your character. Do you acknowledge that? In personal ways that help you be generous in spirit, not proud in spirit. He goes on, "Do not take to heart all the things that people say, lest you hear your servant cursing you." Then this last line, "Your heart knows that many times you yourself have cursed others." A corrective to judgmentalism, a corrective to a critical spirit is remembering that most likely, it's going to be a very rare thing in my life that I'm going to need to forgive somebody a sin against me that I haven't committed against somebody else in some form. A long time ago, maybe Levi was about 10 or so. He's our oldest son. He had a really bad day. There were times when he had really, really bad days for a really, really long time. And this was one of those stretches. He was stubborn, selfish, prideful, egotistical, judgmental, all kinds of things. As a 10-year-old, yep, it was there. He got it from me, not his mother. He had a really bad day. And for whatever reason, just in the kindness of God, as he was going to bed, we've already, worked through a lot of these things throughout the day, and there's reconciliation in the household and with the family members. But he was on his top bunk, so we're able to look to one another eye to eye. And for whatever reason at this time, it was just landing on him. Eyes started to flood with tears. And he's like, "Dad, I don't know how to change. How am I going to change? I don't want to do this anymore." And from looking him square in the eye, one of my better father moments, and just saying, "Levi, I know what it's like. I still struggle with the same things you struggle with. We'll figure it out together. God will be gracious to us. He'll change us together. That's the author of Ecclesiastes trying to help us. That when we grow to be more like God, the temptation is to start to look at ourselves and say, look at how far I've come. You're not nearly as far along as I am. You're far worse than I was. I'm better than you. And we become critical. And saying, no. Look, even if you hear a servant cursing your name, remember, you've done the same thing to other people. Don't get so critical. Don't get so bent out of shape. Humbly, learn to change and grow together. So to protect us from these two, he acknowledges these two realities are as dangers for us. But then he points a way forward on how you and I can actually grow to have a good name that honors God without trying to control the outcomes and without becoming judgmental. And he mentions it, or he describes it in verses 16 to 18. It says, be not overly righteous. Do not make yourself too wise. Why should you destroy yourself? That's trying to control. Be not overly wicked, neither be a fool. Why should you die before your time? Yeah, you don't want to be a fool either. It says, it's good that you should take hold of this, and from that withhold not your hand. In other words, grab on to both these things. Don't be too righteous, and don't be too wicked. Hold on to both of those. That's the tension you're going to walk. Don't be too righteous, don't be too wicked. And the one who fears God shall come out from both of them. In other words, you will live fearing God, not being too righteous, not being too wicked, establishing a name that honors God. If you fear him, if you fear God. See, in these other ways of becoming good, the heart motivation in some ways is that I want to use God to have a good name so that I can try to control the outcome of my life, or I can make myself look better to other people. I'm going to use God. And this one doesn't use God. This way is in awe of God as a motivation for change. Now, it's strange. I don't know if you think it's strange, but I think it's sort of strange to mention fear of God, fear of the Lord, saves us from becoming too righteous, overly righteous. How does that happen? I was thinking when I was reading through this, and I've thought about this passage for some time, and I was like, if I think about the fear of the Lord and living according to the fear of the Lord, I'm thinking, if God finds anything wrong with me, he's going to punish me, so I better become overly righteous. But that's not how the fear of God works. The fear of God is not living your life wondering if God's like peeking around the corner, ready to jump out and bust you for doing something wrong. The fear of God is not living under terror that he's going to reject you or that he's going to punish you in some way. So, you know, God knows that you better get on an airplane with a clean heart or you're going down. That's not what the fear of God is. Fear of God is developed not because God is so persnickety and critical of spirit, but because he's forgiving and merciful. One of my favorite passages in the Bible, Psalm 130. Hear these words. Out of the depths I cry to you, O Lord. O Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my pleas for mercy. If you, O Lord, should mark iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? Nobody. But with you, he says, but with you, there's forgiveness of sins, so you may be feared. See, we're not called to live in a fearful relationship with God, wondering if he's going to bust us. We're called to live with an awe, a reverence over God in relation to him because he is so lavish in his forgiveness. That's the difference between religion and Christianity. One of the first times I remember being forgiven by someone who really, really mattered to me was my grandfather. I had a high respect for my grandfather. My grandfather had a good name. Anybody who knew my grandfather had good things to say about my grandfather. He was a man of integrity, a man of truth, the kind of guy that you would go to when you were in need, the kind of guy that you would want to enter into contract with. And I remember that I lied to him, and he found out. And my dad wisely had me go talk to him, tell him what I had done, acknowledge it, and ask him for forgiveness. I remember exactly where I was in the family room as he was sitting in his leather chair, and I was telling him what I had done. He already knew. And asking him for forgiveness. And he said the powerful words, "I forgive you. I forgive you, Tim." And in that moment, my heart grew bigger for my grandfather than the Grinch's heart. Why? Because he was a man that I respected. He was a man that I feared. And he was a man who forgave me. That's what forgiveness starts to do in our relationship with God. It causes us to be in awe of him. You forgive me, God. You forgive me. And not only that, it's how he forgives. On the basis, what basis does he have to forgive us? Our sins just don't go away into the netherworld someplace and don't exist anymore. They have to be paid for. And this is where the author of Ecclesiastes starts to point the way forward in the Bible in a way that he didn't even fully imagine how this would take place. Remember how he talks about how he's seen a righteous man die in his righteousness? The author of Ecclesiastes never really fully saw that because he also says that every human being has some kind of sin in their lives. So he's never really seen a purely righteous person die at a young age in their righteousness until Jesus came. For it's when Jesus came, when he was a righteous man who died in his righteousness. Why did Jesus die in his righteousness? For you and me, so that we could be forgiven. Our sins paid for in his death. And not only are our sins paid for in his death, his righteousness, his righteous life, his name, his reputation gets credited to you and me. And that becomes the motivation for a good name. I'm forgiven. I'm already righteous in standing. God thinks the world of me, not because I'm so special, but because his son died for me. Paul says it this way. For our sakes, God made him, that is Jesus, to be sin, who knew no sin, so that in him we might become the righteousness of God. The motivation for a good name is that in Jesus, you already have it. And then, in practice, to represent Jesus in how we do our dealings in daily life. Saves us from trying to control outcomes and saves us from the pit of judgmentalism. Because our whole relationship and our whole character change is wrapped up in God's grace. Today we're going to remember Jesus and his death, that he died a righteous man in his righteousness for you and me. We're going to do so with communion. Online, make sure that you have bread and wine available in the room. Before we take communion, we're going to sing a little bit about Jesus and his name. And you can take that time to go get the communion packet if you don't have one yet and to be back. So we're going to sing. I'm going to pray. We're going to sing a few verses about Jesus and to Jesus. That'll come up, lead us through communion. And then we're going to sing a little bit more. And then we'll be done for today, okay? Would you join me in praying? Father, thank you for your grace, your mercy, your kindness, your goodness. Would you please teach our hearts to fear you because you forgive? May we be in awe and reverence, not only that you forgive, but how you forgive. The great cost. And may it compel us to chase piety and grab it, to become a people of a good name who represent your name. As we remember Jesus, would you please humble our hearts? Speak tender, merciful words to our hearts. Spirit, where there's something where you want to change us because of our time here together, what you're revealing to us, would you give us the courage to seek to change? Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen.